Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from the American Patrol to the American Border Patrol, Glenn Spencer, who's down on the border between the United States and Mexico, trying to do something about the invasion of our country. Now, I got something from Blue Cross, my health policy, health insurer, the other day, and it said, dear Mr. So-and-so, we really appreciate your business, we want to serve you and all sorts of things, and so we'd like to know that in the future, would you like to have your communications with us in Farsi, in English, in Mexican, in Spanish, in Arabic, in Chinese, in Vietnamese, and they listed about 10 different languages that they would write to me in the future, whatever language I'd like to have, why they would communicate me within that language. And of course, the letter I had was also written in Spanish, in Chinese, and one other dialect. It may have been Vietnamese, or it could have been Arabic, I couldn't tell. And what the average American does not understand is that there is a coordinated effort to change us into a multicultural, multilingual society. They want to do away with the old America. There really are people who hate this country, but they can't tell the American people that. There are people who want to transform America, and of course they have no loyalty to this country, although many of them have sworn to support our Constitution. They are dedicated to the New World Order and the New World Religion. And that is why many times you'll actually get onto government websites or government telephone, and they will speak to you both in English and in Spanish, which one do you want to use? If you go into Los Angeles and turn on the television set, you'll have a hard time finding a station in English. They'll have them in every other imaginable language. There's some English ones down there, too. But you must understand that while our attention is being focused on the tragedy unfolding in the Middle East, we are losing our freedom here at home, and it is part of the plan. They know exactly what they're doing, they just don't want us to know. Well, one of the heroes of this effort to focus the attention of the American people on the great invasion that's taking place today, the transformation of our society, is Glenn Spencer. Hi, Glenn, how are you doing?
Dr. Stan, a pleasure to be with you again.
Well, how long have you been at the game now? How long have you been fighting the battle?
Well, full time, and I mean 7 days a week, a little over 14 years.
Well, you know, I was just saying to a friend of mine, I feel that God's called certain people to be doing certain things, and you're doing something I couldn't do, and that is you're down there on the border trying to put up on your website and through video and through the other things and appearances and the articles that you write, trying to make people aware of the fact that we're losing America. You well, pick up the story there.
I am on the border. I look out my window here, even though it's dark, and I can see the Border Patrol vehicles driving along the border. I can see some lights in Mexico. I can hear behind me the Border Patrol. I have a scanner, and I listen to their radio broadcast. I'm right in the middle of their operation, and they have a powerful antenna. So I hear all day long and all night long everything that goes on with the Border Patrol. They spent 6 hours today chasing a group from the border up to the highway where they picked them up. They're chasing people all over.
Hold that point. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Glenn Spencer. Go ahead, Glenn. You're saying that they're chasing.
I had a visitor today from Washington, D.C., and a fellow that used to be an editor with the National Review. And I took them down to the border. Oh, it was about 4:30 our time and p.m. And a helicopter came racing over our heads at about 30 feet. And it was chasing this same group that they are chasing right now. Now, that was 5 hours ago.
But if they catch them, what are they going to do with them? Are they going to...
Well, they just put them right across the border. This was a group of maybe 10. We've had probably 8 to 10 Border Patrol agents tied up trying to find these people. The helicopter left hours ago. The Border Patrol vehicles drove right past my house, looking for chasing them. I'm right in the middle of it. They chase them all around my house. Many times they never find them. Most of the time they never find them.
But if they take them back south of the border, they're going to come back
if
again.
They catch them if they're Mexicans. They take them over to this little town of Naco, Arizona, and put them through the turnstile back into Mexico so that they can gather their resources and come back the next day.
And if they don't get through today, tomorrow, the next day, they keep coming back so they can eventually come to the land of milk and honey and the land of opportunity. And I can't say I blame them, but what I can do is condemn the fact that our government is not giving the Border Patrol the tools that they need to stop the immigration.
Well, no, they give them the tools, but if there are 50 carpenters, they give them one hammer.
Right.
They give them the tools, they just don't give them enough. They don't give them the right tools, okay? They may need a screwdriver, so they give them an axe. They make sure that the thing doesn't work. I mean, I've been at this long enough. I'm down here. I listen to it all day long. I study it. I fly an airplane. We track them from the air at night and during the day and listen to what goes on. And I just want the American people to know that this is the biggest sham, the biggest con job any government has ever pulled on its people.
But, of course, they want to give you the impression they're really trying. Oh, shucks, we're just so incompetent we can't do anything. But they really don't want to stop the invasion, do they?
They don't want to stop it. The president doesn't want to stop it. So they spend billions of dollars in this stupid hide-and-go-seek charade.
Hold that thought right there, Glenn. Sir. Glenn, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, our guest this evening is Glenn Spencer of the American Patrol, the American Border Patrol, and Glenn is simply saying that they've been chasing one group of people who came by his house, 10 people, and they've been chasing them, and whether they caught them or not, I don't know. But if they did catch them, they'd take them to the adjacent town, and they'd put them through a turnstile, send them back to Mexico, and then they'd come back the next day, and the next day, and the next day, until they can get on through. And they have no intention of really trying to stop the invasion, but we want to convince the American people that they're trying, and they're just so incompetent. And as Glenn says, you know, the people working for the Border Patrol are trying to do a good job, but they're not given the right tools. And of course, many times when they actually do catch them in many places, why, they take them before a hearing, and then they say, well, now you have to come back in 2 weeks for your permanent hearing here. And lo and behold, most of them never come back for the hearing. They simply disappear into our country.
That's correct. Those are the other than Mexicans. The Mexicans, there is no hearing. They just put them back across the border and let them try again.
Now, what about people from the Islamic countries coming across the
border?
Same
thing. If they run them through a computer, and unless they're on a watch list or they have committed some crime that they know about, they let them go.
In other words, these can be Islamic terrorists, but they allow them to come in, or they don't let them go, don't they tell them to come back for a hearing?
Yes, they do. They say, here is your court date, and we want you here to have a hearing as to whether you should be deported. And, of course, they don't show up, you know, 95% of the time.
Well, is there any punishment if you don't show up?
Well, no, they don't even try to find them.
How do we know that these are not hardcore Al-Qaeda terrorists coming to disrupt and destroy this
country? Unless they're on a watch list, unless they've popped up on somebody's database, we don't.
And, of course, this is the most incredible thing. Here we are involved with a war on terrorism. We've got to take away the freedom of the American people. Everybody's going to have to have some sort of an ID card. We got cameras going up every place, and they're catching people from the Islamic countries. And, of course, then they're letting them go. And if anybody's concerned about them, why, they get orders from Washington, D.C. to let them go. I mean, are we really involved in a war on terrorism, or are we involved in a war on the freedom of the American people?
Well, I think it's a war on the freedom of the American people. You know, we as American Border Patrol, we're a nonprofit corporation, 501c3, live off the donations of the people. And we're here working in the interest of the American people. Three times we took a simulated weapon of mass destruction, put it in a backpack, took it into Mexico, and smuggled it up through the San Pedro River here, up into Sierra Vista, and then over to Tucson and into shopping malls and everything. We did that three times. We did it at night. And we filmed it, and it got into these DVDs got into the hands of some very powerful congressmen. Well, the Border Patrol and the government was just absolutely petrified of us doing this again because it really made them look bad. So you know what they did? They decided that the problem was that we were going into this river area, which is part of the Bureau of Land Management riparian zone. So they put up signs saying you can't go in there at night. So that we couldn't go in there and smuggle our weapon of mass destruction, that a U.S. citizens can no longer, after sunset, go into this riparian area, this river area.
Well, do you think that's going to keep the Islamic terrorists out? I mean,
if you go into that area and you're caught, unless you're on a watch list, they let you go. But if you're a citizen, you'll be prosecuted.
Well, sometimes, you know, I think we live in a world gone mad. Other times, I'm certain of it. And I think it's so important for our listeners to understand, we're not really trying to stop the Islamic terrorists. And, you know, we could talk on and on about how they've done everything they could to prevent, you know, the pilots on our planes being armed. And there really aren't very many air marshals up there, only about 2,000 of them. Probably 10% of the flights have air marshals on them. None of our planes have any defense against surface-to-air missiles. It'd be so easy to bring them on into this country. Now you can now take 4-inch blade scissors and certainly 6-inch screwdrivers onto the planes. And the pilots are furious with this, but that's all right. The government says they're more worried about bombs. We can't do any racial profiling. Oh, no, we wouldn't want to racially profile people getting on. We got to consider everybody may be a terrorist, but we can't, of course, profile more than two of the people getting on the plane if they're Islamic. And really, of course, people have to understand that the war on terrorism is as phony as a $3 bill. There really is a problem. I have no question.
Yeah, they don't want, and I give you some examples, they do not want the American people to know what's going on. You know, we have, I fly an airplane. We have a Cessna TU-206, a turbocharged six-passenger utility aircraft. And we take the cargo doors off in the back, and I have a cameraman back there. We go out at night and also during the day, and we send live streaming video of the border out over the Internet. And we've been doing this and seeing groups and seeing the Mexican military, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I went up to Tucson, Arizona to meet with the Customs and Border Protection head of flight operations so that we could avoid any problems with their operations. So he said, well, Mr. Spencer, if you see a Border Patrol helicopter when you're flying out there, you go up, you have to stay far away from him, go at least 1,000 feet above the ground, and maintain visual separation. And I said, yes, sir, Mr. LeVon, and that was on December 5th. The last three times I have flown, the Border Patrol detained me, held me, they detained me at the airport at Bisbee for over an hour. They wouldn't let me go. They said, oh, I was smuggling drugs in from Mexico. The guy knew who I was. The last time I flew, last Saturday, with some Minutemen, I saw a Border Patrol helicopter. I contacted him by radio, and I went to this prescribed altitude. He told me I couldn't come within 5 miles of him. And then he called the Air Force base, and they were going to send an interceptor down to get me. Even though I have called the Border Patrol office before we took off, even though I have met with all of those people and coordinated all of this, they're threatening me because I'm up sending live pictures of what's going on the border. It's incredible, Dr. Right. Stan. They're taking my rights away from me, even though I did everything they asked me to do.
Well, I think the trouble is that you haven't done one thing, and that is you haven't been silent. You're focusing the attention of the American people on this to the point where the president, in his State of the Union speech earlier this week, was forced to talk about the unbridled immigration. Of course, his solution is to make all the people here who are here illegally, illegal. He wants to make them all legal, and then we won't have a Border Patrol problem, will we?
No, that's what he says. We've got to legalize all of these people. Well, he doesn't know. He said that they're going to make a guest worker, but no amnesty. Tell me how you get 15 million people working in the United States legally, paying taxes without making them citizens. Do you know what their cry would be? No taxation without representation. And I have said the cry that created this country could well be put it under. That they would demand citizenship. If they're paying taxes and working in this country, they will demand the vote. And we will give it to them.
Now, because I've heard they actually that they're 20 million, but nobody really knows.
If they then come in and are... Can you believe this? That our president thinks we should... Let's say it's 15 million. Our president thinks we should have 15 million people working in this country who have no rights. And he says, what are you going to do, deport them, 15 million? You'll never do it. Well, wait a minute. He says after 6 years they have to go home. What's the likelihood they're going to go home after 6 years? You're going to have to deport them. You'll never do it. This is an impossible plan.
Well, of course you know, Glenn, that this all is part of a much larger plan, and that is for the destruction of America, for the destruction of our sovereignty, and for merging us. And if you look at things logically, nothing makes sense. If you look at it from the point of view that this is part of the bigger plan by those people who hate America and who would submerge us into this one-world government and take away our sovereignty and our freedom and our constitutional rights, then it all makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only way it makes sense. Because that's exactly what... If he gets this guest worker program, these people will become citizens. Bill King is on my board of directors. He was a chief U.S. Border Patrol agent. He ran the Border Patrol Academy. He ran the amnesty program for the Western region for the INS last time. That was the biggest region.
That was in 1986 under the
Reagan. He legalized well over 1 million people. He was responsible for that. He tells me, he said that was impossible to try to do. He said, you're now talking about 15 million? He said, we don't have the resources. If you would have to rubber stamp anybody who came in and applied for this program would have to be approved because we won't have the resources to screen them. And there's rampant fraud. They will bring letters. They will say, they will claim everything. We have no way of checking them out. They will have letters saying they've been working here for 5 years when they've been here 3 days. And they will cheat. And he said, when that happens, you will approve everyone. It will be 15 million. They will all become U.S. citizens very quickly. And then they can bring in their families from Mexico and Central America. That will cover, and he has calculated, if the president gets this plan through, we will legalize half of Mexico to come into the United States. When that happens, we're finished.
Now you're really talking 15 million multiplied by 3, so that'd be about 45 million.
And, that's correct.
And so I have to understand, the people in Washington are pretty smart. They're brilliant people. They know exactly what they're doing. They just do not want the American people to understand this is part of a much larger plan. The destruction of America, the destruction of our sovereignty, and the end of America as we've known it. There are people who march to a different drumbeat, who dream a different dream, and they believe in a new world order and a one world religion. When do you understand that? Oh, they may talk about their loyalty to America, they may talk about their loyalty to Christianity, but watch people what they're doing. Understand what the overall scheme is, the long-range plan to bring democracy to all of the nations of the world, to unite all people under the rule of a one world leader. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Glenn Spencer. Glenn, are you still running, putting up those little drones that you were using before with video cameras on them?
Well, no, they did their job. What we did with our unmanned aerial vehicles was to embarrass the government, to make them apply this technology, and we succeeded in doing that.
But of course, yours cost a few thousand, theirs cost a few million.
Yes, theirs cost $4 million plus $10 million to operate it for a year.
Right. And what does yours cost?
$40,000 and very inexpensively operated. But we achieved that objective. We still have three of them. But for a number of reasons, we decided to go to what we call a manned unmanned aerial vehicle. We were beginning to run into trouble with the FAA. They didn't like our little drone flying around at night where other airplanes might be, even though we were below 500 feet. So they started putting pressure on us. So we decided to take all of our equipment and put it in a real airplane. I'm the pilot. And we've been flying that since really the 1st of October. And with great success. And we're equipping it with some more powerful cameras. And now we can actually send, and we'll be doing this tomorrow morning, we can send, and we've done this three times, and it's worked. It's a real technological feat because we're designing all the stuff ourselves. We can send live streaming TV quality video over the internet to people in their, on their computers if they have broadband and if they have Windows 2000 or XP. So if they have that, they can actually see live what we're seeing. We had a reporter in here from Washington, D.C. We ran a mission. We were only up 30 minutes because he couldn't stay long. We caught pictures of the Mexican military. Of course, there's a big stink about that. We've been reporting Mexican military on the border for a couple of years, live from our UAV and now from our airplane. And we caught a group getting ready to cross.
Were these the military or were these just immigrants?
No, these are Mexican military.
Okay.
With our aircraft, we now have a very powerful camera, which was too big. The camera we use is almost weighs as much as our UAV. It's a still camera. We have used video. But we have a very powerful 17.5 megapixel Canon camera. With a 300-millimeter zoom lens. And we take pictures of these people, and you can identify the individual soldiers. So we have lots of those on AmericanPatrol.com. American Border Patrol has posted those pictures, and they're all over the place. it was reported another incursion in Texas.
Now, why do you think they're sending the military to do this? Is this just to help the people come across the border? Or?
Absolutely. They help them. They help the drug dealers. They protect the drug dealers. Sometimes they rob the migrants, right? The people who are migrating through their own country before they become illegal aliens. We've seen that. These are criminals.
Now, what about the MS-13? Do you run into that? Is there much of an MS-13 influence there?
Well, the Mara Salvatrucha gang is one of the most vicious in America. They have caught many of them crossing the border. There is the word, and the Border Patrol is taking it seriously, that MS-13 may be contracted to assassinate Border Patrol agents.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening is Glenn Spencer, American Patrol, American Border Patrol. And you can go to, of course, their website. Is that .com or .org, Glenn?
It's .com, AmericanBorderPatrol.com and AmericanPatrol.com.
Okay, and you can actually see the live streaming of these pictures that they're shooting up there of the people coming. And I was asking Glenn about the MS-13. Now, the MS-13 is a terrorist organization. These are criminals. They come out of, really, they came out of El Salvador originally. That's what the S stands for there. And These people, they have a ruthless structure here. You're a leader of it. You have to kill somebody to become a leader, and many times even to be a member of this organization. These people are heavily tattooed. These people have a strict discipline. They are so ruthless, even the mafia is afraid of them. They're operating in all major cities in America. And Glenn was just saying that there's rumors now they've been taking out contracts to kill Border Patrol agents. Is that really true?
They're taking it very seriously. Chertoff has said that they're beginning to fight back. The MS-13, they are taking it seriously. The FBI is taking it seriously that they're going to be targeting Border Patrol agents. I believe that what we're going to see here on the border, in fact, it's going to be like flicking a switch. And the reason is so many of these people who are coming across the border, when they're apprehended, nothing really happens to them. Now, with the more pressure being put on the Border Patrol to do its job by people such as us and you and others, they're beginning to yield to some of that pressure. They're throwing more resources at it, and they're making it a little more difficult for the people crossing the border because of all the public pressure and the scrutiny that's out there. Well, you know, up to now, the people who come across generally are very passive, because when they get stopped, they figure that, well, they'll just come back the next day. So there's an unwritten law that they will not be aggressive, they will not attempt to attack anyone. But that is beginning to change, and I believe that it could change overnight, that they will all become aggressive, and we will have ourselves a border war. I believe that could happen any minute.
And I think that, of course, this is already being encouraged by the Mexican government with the full support of our own government, because certainly our president works very closely with his good friend Vicente Fox, and the goal is exactly the same, to convince the American people that we're trying to do something, whereas in fact the Mexican government wants to get rid of these people. These people are really, they're very poor. A lot of them have really been impoverished because of American foreign policy. Many of them were poor dirt farmers. They were already impoverished, and then when NAFTA came in, and NAFTA was supposed to really help the people of Mexico and create all the jobs here, and what it really did was to allow us to flood their country with subsidized American products, specifically corn. And now these already impoverished Mexican farmers were even poorer. So here we were there to help them, and we impoverished them. They have no means of making a living. And rather than have the political unrest at home, the Mexican government encourages them to come to America, where they can earn money and send it back to Mexico to help support their economy. Would that be a fairly good appraisal?
Well, it is. The more I have looked at this, however, I believe that the failure of the Mexican economy to create jobs for people may be by design. I think years ago, the power elite in Mexico decided that they were either going to be overwhelmed by our money, by the Yankee dollar, or we were going to be overwhelmed by their people. And they chose the latter. So they restricted investment by foreigners into Mexico, and they created an impossible situation. That then created the opportunity for massive corruption. This corruption exists, it's widespread today, and everyone knows it. But they have created a situation where the people have to come north. And isn't it interesting that they can retain their corruption and their control of Mexico by a few families with billions of dollars, while at the same time exporting their problems and creating a political base here in the United States? So it is a win-win situation for Mexico and a lose-lose situation for the United States. And their greatest cheerleader here is the President of the United States.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Well, I think we got a real problem. And I. So when we get back here in a few minutes, I will invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. As our economy turns down and more of the Mexicans here, and most of them are good people, they're not bad people at all. They want a better life. They want a job. But, of course, they're going to be taking your job because they'll work for a lot less. They'll work a lot harder. And, of course, they will eventually bankrupt our society. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and most people don't understand that when the people are coming in from Mexico, they carry diseases with them. Ordinarily, somebody's going to come in legally if they're ill. Why, of course, we won't let them in. They have a communicable disease. We're not going to let them in. The illegals come in, and, of course, they're bringing with them leprosy. They're bringing with them a multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. They're bringing in all sorts of things like whooping cough and other diseases that are spreading diseases all along the border states. And of course, they're overwhelming our healthcare industry. Many of the hospitals down there along the border are simply closing because they are required by federal law to provide free medical care for people who are here illegally. Doesn't make any sense, but then, of course, very little that's going on makes any sense unless you understand what the real plan is. So, are you seeing that some of the hospitals in your area have had to shut down or at least shut down their emergency rooms?
Absolutely. The hospitals along the border, especially in Douglas, Arizona, are in dire straits. The Mexicans come right across the border in ambulances, and the Border Patrol waved them through if they're in ambulances and direct them to our hospitals directly out of Mexico.
And so then they get free medical care. It doesn't burden the Mexican healthcare system. Isn't that nice of us?
Yes, and I have people, the young couple is a laborer. He was working here. He came down with a serious illness. He was working on a project in my backyard, and I was paying him well. But he didn't have health insurance, so he had to go to the hospital where to get care, and he had to stand in line. And could not get the kind of care he needed because there are so many illegal aliens here. I will tell you, it is this way all across the Southwest and now all across America.
In fact, it's really spreading into the northern states that, you know, most of the people, in the northern part of the United States weren't really concerned until recently, when they began looking around their communities and finding that everything is changing, and not by accident, but by intent, but you're not supposed to notice.
Well, as I say, I've been at this for 14 years. I started out really in late 1991, early 1992, with Shirley Lertzman, who happened to have been a member of the Los Angeles County Grand Jury, and her husband, Dr. Lertzman, who had a practice down on Wilshire Boulevard. And Shirley got me into she knew everybody in L.A. County and the government of the city of Los Angeles, and I was able to get very, very good data on the cost of illegal immigration.
Hold that thought just for a moment. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Glenn Spencer. And before I go on, Glenn, I want you to get your web page out and how people can get in touch with you and hopefully how they'll help you, because Glenn's work is important and we certainly support what he does. And if you feel motivated to help him, why, he's one of the good guys. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, well, we're on AmericanBorderPatrol.com, and you can donate to us there. Also, you can download our Border Cam software over on the right side. Just download that software and install it in your computer. And whenever we're up flying the border, sending live video, a little message will pop up on your computer saying American Border Patrol is flying the border with live video where you can watch the invasion live. So just download that software. We're also at 1-800-600-VOICE, 1-800-600-VOICE. I have another website, which is a slash and burn take no prisoners. It's not really part of American Border Patrol. I just pay for it myself. It's called AmericanPatrol.com, and we've had over 14 million visits to that site. It's the most popular in the country on this subject.
Okay, fine. You were just saying about the expense of it.
Yeah, well, I started out, I got an inside document that was just being produced for L.A. County on the cost of illegal immigration, and this was a study sanctioned and provided, financed by the 1986 IRCA law, that they set aside money for L.A. County to get in and really find out what this thing is doing to the county. This study was devastating. It was incredible. The cost, these people are paying very little in the way of taxes. They were using county services. It was just devastating. And one of the things that really got me going in this whole area was when the Los Angeles Times wrote an editorial saying that this study had nothing new in it. There was everything new in it. It was a peer-reviewed, comprehensive analysis that was absolutely devastating. And when I saw that this major newspaper was lying through its teeth, I knew that we had a serious problem, and that was 14 years ago.
And, of course, at that time, I suppose it was a few hundred million dollars. Now, in California, I've heard, what, is it $3 or $4 billion just for California?
Oh, no, it's probably $6 billion by now. It may be more than that. It is just incredible. And I, of course, fought this in Los Angeles for 10, 11 years and saw the Los Angeles Times. It's a criminal operation. Lie, dissemble the truth. Why they do this and who is in charge and why they're doing this to destroy this country, I have no idea. But I have been in court with them and I have fought those people. They are lying criminals.
And those are the good things you can say about them. Well, let's go to Terry, who's calling us from Sun Valley. Hi, Terry. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah. I think Mr. Spencer made a very important comment when he was talking about the economics of the invasion. And I was reminded that I think around 1912, Marxism began to creep into Mexico, and Woodrow Wilson did everything he could to prevent people here who could see the danger coming from letting it happen. And just like many people in Europe come to the U.S. because there's so much socialism, maybe part of the problem that many of the politicians are afraid to address is that many of the illegals are fleeing Marxism.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. They did have basically a communist revolution there in the late 1920s and early 1930s. They killed, I don't know, tens of thousands of priests and nuns, and of course they got the communist state, and that's what you really have. You have everybody impoverished, and then you have a small ruling elite. That's what communism is really all about, but they, and Marxism, they can't let the American people know that. And this was largely brought into being by the Masonic influence in the United States. We have a book called No God Next Door that covers that. And if anybody's interested in going to the Mexican Revolution, No God Next Door, a very important book.
Well, you know, I held rallies in Los Angeles out by the federal building, and we were attacked many times by the Progressive Labor Party. This is a communist organization. Look it up on the Internet. Look it up. I'm looking at it right now. Progressive Labor Party. This is we fight directly for communism, they said.
Right.
And they had their banners. They had the mostly Chicanos, under the communist banner, were fighting us and injured many of our people. And we see now this left-wing swing all across Latin America, Mexico, Central America, and South America. And suddenly we see Castro having more and more influence. And this next election, at the end of this year in Mexico, they're going to put a socialist in power.
Right.
And now you're going to see the struggle against capitalism and our freedom from all throughout this hemisphere. And, of course, this was one of the reasons I argued against the war in Iraq, because we're going to spend all of this money trying to clean up the Middle East when this hemisphere itself was falling apart.
You're absolutely right. Iraq is a great distraction to keep us from seeing what's happening here at home. Terry, do you have anything else you wanted to say?
When he was talking about some of the bureaucrats who seem to be sort of numb or unable to grasp it, I sometimes think it's not so much the 14 or 30 million illegals that are the problem, it's maybe the few thousand bureaucrats and the council and the Masonic order that are really the trouble. And some of them obviously are, like as you said, Dr. Stan, are people who are not committed to the idea of countries anymore. That's passe to them.
That's right.
Well, you have to understand that within the Border Patrol, under Clinton and under Doris Meissner, who ran the INS, which included the Border Patrol, Doris Meissner, I saw 11 years ago, I called her a traitor. She ran the INS. I watched everything she was doing. She was taking the Border Patrol and Interior Enforcement apart. And now that she's out of power, you know what she just did? She ran the INS and ran the Border Patrol for years. She was just part of a panel that prepared a report for the Council on Foreign Relations that recommended the erasure of the Mexican-U.S. border in 5 years.
Well, I think people have to really understand that the people of the Council on Foreign Relations hate America. And, hey, these are the Secretary of State always comes from there, the Director of the CIA, Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. These people have a different agenda. And what people really don't understand is how they interlock with the great tax-exempt foundations, Ford, Carnegie, Rockefeller, MacArthur, all these others. And they've been financing communism and socialism for years, and anybody who doubts that needs to read a book we've kept in print for at least 10 years called Foundations, Their Power and Their Influence, which goes into the Ford Foundation financing communism and socialism. And Glenn, you've even in your video, which we carried for such a long time, The Conquest of Aslan, talked about the influence of the Ford Foundation. Would you like to discuss that a little bit?
Okay, well, here Meissner had her second in command was Dr. Robert Bach. And Robert Bach was in charge of policy and planning for the INS, including the Border Patrol. Well, he set about to dismantle the whole thing. Well, now, where did Dr. Robert, what qualifications did this man have to help protect America? Well, for 7 years before getting the job of helping control immigration, he worked for the Ford Foundation for 7 years on immigration. And the Ford Foundation, these are the people who put up all the money and created the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund.
That's Maldives, right?
Maldives.
Right.
They're the ones who go out and have attacked all of our laws. They're the ones who forced it because they got this stupid Supreme Court back in 1982 to say we had to educate everyone. That's led to the destruction of our education system. So they did that. They also gutted the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act. These people are out to destroy the country. They also created and funded and started the National Council of La Raza. That was the Ford Foundation.
Right.
Now, here was a guy who worked for those people for 7 years, and then he took over the Border Patrol. And he emasculated it, destroyed it.
And you see, if people hear this sort of thing, they can't understand why the Ford Foundation would be doing these things. Oh, they just didn't know what they were doing. Of course they knew what they were doing. Old Henry Ford, you know, he built the truck plant in Gorky for the communists. He helped to put the Nazis onto wheels. He backed both the communists and the Nazis and was deeply involved with the occult. Until you understand that this whole thing, these people of great wealth who have a different dream, and of course that involves the the destruction of America as we know it, and using the military and financial power of our nation to lead the whole world, to force the whole world into this new world order. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And if you'd like to give us a call, if you have a question for our guest, we'd love to hear from you. Well, Glenn, you know, recently the 60 Minutes had a program on, and they were sort of deriding the idea of building a fence between the United States and Mexico, and you know, of course, it's such a long border, but of course, the Indians are building a 2,500-mile-long wall between India and Pakistan to keep out the Al-Qaeda terrorists from their country. The Chinese were able to build the Great Wall of China a couple of thousand years ago. 2,000 years ago, the Romans were able to build a wall all across Great Britain to separate the barbaric north from the Roman-controlled south. But we have no idea how to do that. And in fact, the 60-minute program was suggesting that actually it would make things worse and bring about more immigration if we had some sort of a fence there.
Well, you know, what you have warned about, I mean, people could go onto our site and search for Council on Foreign Relations. I'm looking at it right here, March 14th, 2005. You know, they're calling for a North American economic community by 2010, eliminating all borders, opening up everything. They're going to integrate Mexico, the United States, and Canada. You know, this was Doris Meissner. She was one of the consultants on this thing.
And I think it's really so interesting. That was CAFTA was all about legislation they got through last year. And the Bush administration spent $50 billion bribing about 30 congressmen to switch their votes, giving them money for developments in their districts. $50 billion for 30 congressmen to buy their votes to get CAFTA through, and it passed by two votes. They're going to put poor old Mr. Abramoff, you know, he only took a few million dollars, you know, I think $30 or $40 million that he swindled from the Indians. What about $50 billion of American taxpayer of money for projects for the congressmen who actually betrayed their constituents and voted against for something they knew was wrong, which is CAFTA, which is doing away with our borders and merging first North America into this one world order, and then, of course, South America, and then the whole world. And we'll all be living under one happy Marxist society, because our leaders have been pushing Marxist societies throughout the world for years, but we can't let the American people know that.
Well, you know, let me just say that what I agree with you, what we're doing here at American Border Patrol, you know, we can't get involved in politics. I can as an individual and say anything I want. But what American Border Patrol is doing right now, I am preparing a secret document. It's a video or DVD, and it'll be finished in a few days. I've been working on it for 2.5 months. It's called How the Border Patrol Works and Why It Doesn't. It goes down to the molecular level on exactly how the Border Patrol does its job. And we've been studying it and living it down here. Everything that they use, all the technology that they use, all of the systems and procedures that they use, exactly how they go about doing their job. And then we go down to the molecular level and show exactly why it's failing. And this was by design. For example, may I give you an example?
You can give me all the examples you want to.
All right. One of the things that the Border Patrol does, it tries to find people coming in across our borders, right? And then if it finds them or detects them by some means, either by ground sensors or a public report, or they're spotted with a camera or an airplane, then they have to move the border agents into position to apprehend them, right? Now, these are out in the wilderness, and it's very difficult to know where you are, to tell the Border Patrol, go to this location and apprehend these people. But what technology do you think would be most useful in telling the Border Patrol and helping them find out where to go? The global positioning satellites.
Right, sure.
They don't use them.
Well, of course, that would be effective, and you see, they're not supposed to really be doing anything. It's sort of like busy work, you know. Give the American people the idea we're really trying to do something while we allow the invasion to continue.
Well, 10 years ago, I was trying to get the ranchers organized in southern San Diego County. And I had a meeting in Boulevard, California, which is in east, right on the border, eastern San Diego County. And I stood there with a GPS system looking at Johnny Williams, who was the, he was then the head of the San Diego sector. And I said, Mr. Williams, the ranchers down here have these Garmin GPS systems, and they want to know why they can't call in the coordinates to you instead of using landmarks, which are very unreliable. And he said, well, Mr. Spencer, the reason we can't do that is that Border Patrol agents aren't trained to read maps. Now,
how do they find their way home?
Well, by landmark. You have to go by the big windmill and go south on the dirt road and next to the Green Gate. Okay.
I bet even the members of Al-Qaeda know how to read the maps. And I understand that the Mexican government is passing maps out to the illegal aliens. How come the illegal aliens are so much smarter than our Border Patrol?
Yeah, I had a reporter call me 3 months ago and said, Mr. Spencer, I just went through the Border Patrol Academy with two Border Patrol agents, and we went through the whole thing, and we're going to be now following these things, guys, through their careers. And he had some questions for me. And I said, let me ask you a question. You went through the whole academy, right? He said, yes, I did. I was right with these guys. I said, does the Border Patrol ever taught to read maps? And he thought for a minute, and he says, no, we don't. So 10 years ago, it's true today. And the reason that they're not taught is that they don't want them to use these GPS, because they use longitude and latitude. They don't want them to have to know how to read maps that way. They want to keep them stupid and lost.
You could not do such a poor job unintentionally. I mean, the people who are involved in this whole thing are extremely intelligent. I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the public to know.
I've recorded hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of all of the Border Patrol radio traffic at NACO. I have a very powerful antenna, and I'm right down here. I'm a listening post. Hundreds and hundreds of hours. There's nothing they can do about it. I'm not releasing it, I'm not rebroadcasting it, I know what the rules are. But I'm studying it, and I will tell you, probably half of their radio traffic is trying to tell each other where they are and where to go. I mean, it is so stupid that they don't use GPS. It is criminal neglect. It's criminal behavior that they let these guys go out and wander around in the wilderness and not knowing where the heck they are and not even know how to read a map.
And, of course, the Mexican illegal alien is a victim of this whole thing. I mean, they're looking for a better life. Their country has failed them, mainly because we, of course, allowed this whole thing to come about. And now the people are poorer than ever, and they want to come to the land of milk and honey. If I was a Mexican, a dirt farmer who'd been impoverished by NAFTA, I'd probably be doing the same thing. But instead of trying to help them and trying to give them a free society where they could be competitive, they're one of the richest countries in the world. They got tremendous natural resources. Isn't it amazing that the people are so impoverished, except for the few, the ruling elite? Sort of like America, the ruling elite. Well, Dr. Stan, we've got Ted calling from Georgia. Ted, did you have a question for our guest?
A comment that I think is very relevant to what you're talking about.
All right, you go right ahead.
All right, I think that the non-Hispanic Americans should learn Spanish, the Spanish language, and I think we'll be at a big disadvantage if we don't know Spanish.
All right, fine. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Ted?
That's it.
Do you think we ought to try to save America?
Well, certainly.
Okay, thanks.
I agree with frankly everything you all have said tonight.
Okay, fine. Well, I think that we got a real problem. I think that the one thing we need to do is to address what the issue is and the real agenda behind what's going on. But hey, thanks very much. Because it'd be fun to learn Spanish. I wish I had the time to do it. God bless. Thanks very much.
Yes, sir.
And I think that of course, increasingly, we're going to find in our schools and our hospitals, in every aspect of our lives. Why, if we're going to become a bilingual society, that's what the plan is. You certainly would agree with that, wouldn't you, Glenn?
Oh, there's no question about it. We have many places in the United States today, deep in Los Angeles, where they don't have bilingualism. It's all in Spanish. And we're but the gentleman makes a good point. as we teach these migrants and these immigrants English at our expense, they suddenly become bilingual. And then many, many jobs require you to become be bilingual, and it's set up so that the only people who now qualify those for those jobs are migrants from Mexico, because we've taught them English.
Right, and of course the thing is that what we need to do is not hate the people coming across the border. I mean, they're victims of this whole thing, just as we soon will be, I feel, you know, immigrants in our own country. Because what they really want to do is destroy the culture of this society. And they're doing a pretty good job of it, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Well, you know,
for the
Glenn,
president now to come in and State of the Union address and say, gee, we're dumbing down our schools, we've got to get smarter. Well, he's doing it.
Well, I wish you'd come right out and say, we should think, Glenn, instead of running around. Our guest this evening has been Glenn Spencer from the AmericanControl.org. It's .org. AmericanControl.com or AmericanBorderPatrol.com.
Right.
Go to his website and help Glenn. They need your help. They need your support. Glenn is one of the real heroes of this battle. Hey, thanks very
Thank
much,
you.
And I hope we can get you onto our other programs here. I want all of the people out across America to hear what's really going on and come to the realization there is no way that they could do this poor job unless there was another agenda. Good night.
Thank
God
you.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will certainly want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio, by Internet, 4 hours by satellite, 9 hours a day by satellite, and on 3 or 4 different satellites and 4 different Internets, trying to educate the American people. So if you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle, because behind this whole move towards world government are powerful spiritual forces. And if you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, educational battlefield, why, we hope you'll decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do have an excellent 4-tape set on immigration, some of my interviews with Glenn Spencer and others on this subject. If you would like to get a tape of the program we just did, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. One of the big issues, of course, is water fluoridation. We have actually have an offering now. Booklet made up of the website of the Environmental Protection Agency's EPA scientists website. There is a union of the EPA scientists, and they're trying to warn the American people that they're poisoning us, they're poisoning our children with water fluoridation. Actually, in August of last year, why, they sent letters to both the members of Congress and the Senate and to the director of the EPA, asking them to stop water fluoridation because of the new studies that show its definite relationship to osteogenic sarcoma, which is a cancer of the bone in pre-adolescent boys, a report that had been actively suppressed at Harvard University for 5 years, and then, of course, talking about the terrible toxic effect of the what they're putting into our water, which is not fluoride alone, but flusalicic acid that has lead and cadmium and arsenic and mercury. And, of course, you're not knowing that. And, of course, in all the areas where they have fluoridated water, there's an increased blood level in the blood of the children. And, of course, that destroys their brains. But you're not going to hear this sort of thing. In fact, I don't know anybody who's offering this. If you'd be interested in learning more about this study we have on the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, Union, and their website, you can pull this down up on the Internet at the Treasury Union, that's I've forgotten the website there, frankly, my producer may have it, he has my copy, but it's the website for the Environmental Protection Agency Union, and I think it's ETU 280, but you can call and we'll get it for you, or you can get it from us. You understand that the water fluoridation is aimed at, of course, destroying the fertility of our people, or destroying the minds of our children. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. The website is NTEU280.org. That's NTEU280.org. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story, behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls at least for the time being. We have with us on the line Brent Rooney. And Brent is one of those people who's deeply involved in this battle for human life. And the great tragedy is we've killed, since 1973 in Roe versus Wade, somewhere between 40 and 45 million human beings here in America. And, of course, our policies of funding through family planning throughout the world have probably killed 10 times that many children, unborn children throughout the world. And this is having a profound impact. It's fact that people are not having families, that they're killing the unborn children. In Japan, they're having real problems within a relatively few years. The whole society faces collapse because there's nobody to take care of the aging people there. Here in the United States, we have a real problem, as President Bush pointed out in his State of the Union message. By the year 2030, why 60% of all of the income of the federal government will be going out to pay for Social Security and for Medicare benefits. In other words, 60% of everything the government takes in, and that means that 40% will be left over for all the functions of government, for all the other government programs, for the military. And as he said, there will have to be massive tax increases, or there'll have to be dramatic cuts in everything and all sorts of spending. And in fact, it's been estimated that they would have to actually raise the taxes on the working people to almost 50 or 60%. That would be the taxation on the working people just to pay for the for the retired people. Now, how many people are going to work if they're putting out 50% of their income to pay the Social Security and health care for those people who are retired? And so, but a lot of this is the direct result of our killing off our unborn children. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. Well, Brent Rooney has come up with some fascinating new information. I want him to share it with you, and we're going to be talking about abortion this hour. And, of course, abortion is something that God hates, because every one of those children that has been killed here in America and throughout the world with our financing is a unique individual, made in the image and likeness of God. Brent, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners what the latest information is and why it's so important?
Well, first let's do a review. There are three major health risks for induced abortions. One is breast cancer, second is suicide, and the third is future preterm birth. In the first month of life, prematurity is the number one cause of death and disease in a newborn. And in 2004, there was a successful defense in a cerebral palsy case. Now, in this case, the newborn wasn't actually preterm, it was actually born postterm. But the doctor was accused of causing cerebral palsy. But he said that the cerebral palsy was due to previous induced abortions, and the judge agreed with him. And he was cleared of the charge. And it's the infection risk of the abortion that increases risk of birth defects, and whether the baby's preterm, full term, or post term. So we're winning in the critical area, and that's the courts. And there was another successful lawsuit involving breast cancer in Portland, Oregon. Portland is a pro-choice state. This woman had an abortion at age 14. She claimed that she was putting increased risk of breast cancer. And the defendant made an offer of judgment, which says, I'm guilty. So the woman won her case.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Brent Rooney. We're talking about the dangers of abortion. The danger is not simply for killing a human being, which is within the mother's womb, but also for the future life of this young girl. Many times they think, oh, gee, I'm pregnant. Well, I'll just get rid of the baby, and that'll solve the problem. But it really doesn't. And so I'll pick up the story there, Brent. And Brent is simply saying that there have been lawsuits now that have been successfully waged, at least one of them, pointing out that a child born with cerebral palsy could be a direct result of a previous abortion. And what women do not understand is when you have an induced abortion, why, of course, your chance of having a cervix that doesn't function quite correctly is dramatically increased. The more abortions you have, the higher the risk rate. And this leads then to premature birth. And premature birth is associated with cerebral palsy and many other complications. You pick up the story there, Brent.
Okay, there are 60 significant studies showing that a woman with an induced abortion increases the risk of a premature baby in the future. And on the 16th of January last month, Dr. Philip Steer, who's a member of the medical establishment in Britain, admitted in an email to me that the evidence was, his word, overwhelming. The evidence was overwhelming that induced abortion increased the risk of premature birth. And the foremost expert in the field of premature birth is Dr. Emile Pevernick of France. He was the head of a French program that between 1972 and 1989 reduced the prematurity rate in France by 52%, which is an absolutely tremendous accomplishment. And Dr. Pevernick is a co-author of studies in 1999 and 2004 validating the abortion prematurity birth risk. We have major members of the medical establishment admitting to this risk.
And Dr. Barbara Luke won an award from March of Dimes last year. And in her 1995 book, she flat out says that women with one or more induced abortions increase their risk of prematurity. So you have major figures in this field admitting to the risk. And there are at least seven ways in which the induced abortion increases risk of prematurity. Infection is one way. Another mechanism is the incompetent cervix. The cervix is the door to the womb. And if the muscle fibers in the cervix are torn or stretched, that means that the door to the womb will open too early and you'll have a premature birth. And you also have a third risk factor, which is scar tissue on the womb, called adhesion, which means that the fertilized egg cannot implant properly into the womb.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Brent Woody. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brent is basically talking about the potential complications that are there when you have an induced abortion. And one of those, of course, would be infection. And women would get infections after induced abortions. And of course, because the cervix is patent, many times bacteria can get up there. And of course, the infection can destroy the lining of the uterus. So the fetus at some future date cannot implant readily. The second one would be an incompetent cervix. In other words, the cervix muscles have been stretched and don't function properly. And if you have a serious, even one induced abortion, your chance of in the future having a child prematurely is significantly increased. And then, of course, the third would be, well, go ahead, you pick up the story there, Brent.
Well, you also have the simple problem of age. Let's say a woman's first time pregnant at age 20. She has an induced abortion. Let's say that she's maybe 30, 32 before she has her first baby that she wants to bring to term. Well, the older you are and when you have a child, the higher the risk of birth defects. For instance, Down syndrome keeps going up and up with age. Before an age 30, the odds of a Down syndrome child is about 1 in 400. But as you get over age 30, that they keep going up, 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 and up. So you have the increased age factor. You also have the increased risk of substance abuse. The woman has induced abortion, increase the risk of smoking more or drinking more or taking hard drugs. So basically, there are about seven different risk factors, and a woman is foolish to undergo this. For instance, cerebral palsy is actually a manifestation of brain damage. And that brain damage results in improper muscle control. And also, brain damage that the infections can cause the baby can also cause mental retardation. And other risks for prematurity are vision loss, hearing loss, problems in the gut, problems in the lungs, and infection. So basically, it's a very bad scene. In fact, extremely premature babies have 38 times the risk of cerebral palsy as the general population of newborns.
And I really think that cerebral palsy is such a terrible, terrible disease. And to take a chance that something you do today might lead to the fact that you would have a child with cerebral palsy at a later date with a later pregnancy is indeed a frightening thing. And one of the points you've made before is the relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma. You commented that if a family, and there are certain women that where cancer tends to run in the family, and if you actually, come from a family like that with a tendency towards breast carcinoma, and you have an induced abortion, what happens to the rate of cancer? In other words, if there's a family history of cancer of the breast, and you have a first trimester or a second trimester abortion, what happens to your possibility of your rate of getting cancer of the breast?
Well, let's go back to the Portland, Oregon case. This woman actually had a family history of breast cancer, and she told the clinic that this was the case. But they didn't take any note of it or take any action or tell her that it was probably a good idea not to have the induced abortions. Anyway, they relied upon research done by Janet Dowling, who's pro-choice, done in 1994. And Dr. Dowling, her research indicates that if a woman has induced abortion before age 18 and she has a family history of breast cancer, her odds are close, very close to 100% that she'll have breast cancer before the age of 45.
And didn't she have 12 cases, and all 12 of them had breast cancer?
That's correct.
That doesn't mean that's always going to be the case, but in her series of 12 cases, 100%.
Absolutely. And that was a significant result. People say, well, that's only a small sample, 12. However, if you have a small sample, but it's extremely lopsided, you can achieve what they call significance, which means you're at least 95% confident of increased risk.
So I think that this is really a very, very serious problem. And, of course, the thing is that the abortion mills are not interested in certainly telling young girls of the potential risks for what they're doing as far as their ability to get pregnant in the future or having a premature birth and a crippled child or having breast carcinoma themselves. And, of course, we have something in America called informed consent. Now, I'll tell you, it was a terribly bothersome thing when I was practicing medicine to have to tell people that if I operated on them, they might die, they might have infection, they may have difficulties. But we were required by law to do it, and I always gave them a form that told them everything that they needed to know about the possibility of complications related to their surgery. But the trouble is the abortion mills, or at least many of them don't. I understand that in Texas now, they're pretty well forced to do that, aren't they?
In 2003, Texas passed a law that requires every woman to be offered a woman's right to know booklet that tells them about the major risks that are recognized in Texas. And two of the risks that they do recognize are breast cancer and premature babies with handicaps. So they are offered the booklet, although the woman doesn't have to take it. But what actually the good news over the last 15 years has been more and more states are mandating informed consent booklets.
And I think this is really so important. This is one thing that the doctors can do to at least force the abortionists to tell the young girls before they have an abortion of the potential complications. You have to do that with every other disease, and I think it should be mandated by the state governments. I don't like things being mandated, but in this instance, certainly the girls are not going to learn it in school. They're not going to hear it from others because this information is being actively suppressed and unfortunately in certain instances by people very highly placed in the medical profession because they have a different agenda and of course they really believe in getting as many abortions as they possibly can. They have no respect for human life. So certainly you say that other states are now are beginning to mandate a booklet or informed consent for girls who are considering abortion?
I don't know the exact number of states, but I believe it's of the order of about 15. There's a Dr. Philip New of the University of Alabama who just did a study for the Heritage Foundation, and he says that the abortion rate declined by about 18% between 1990 and 1999. And he attributes that to the informed consent laws, which are popularly called the WRTK, Women's Right to Know. And, well, as you know, Texas warns women, but also Michigan, although they have a pro-abortion governor, they do warn women that an induced abortion increases the risk of incompetent cervix and premature babies, although their warning is not nearly as strong as that from Texas. And I believe another state that Philip knew recognized with Florida. Now, Florida is has a high population, but I don't believe that they warn about the prematurity risk, so that will be a future objective to have more and more states warn about the prematurity risk.
And even the possibility, I think it's really scientifically proven there's an increased risk of a premature birth, but certainly if you don't want to go that far, the possibility that there's a premature the birth of the child, and of course the disastrous complications of that premature birth. So the girls really should have a right to know. This should be taught in our schools, but it's not. In fact, one of the things that really offends me is with the Republicans having had control of both Congress and the Senate and the presidency for 5 years, why they've accomplished absolutely nothing. They passed a partial birth abortion bill, and everybody said, isn't it wonderful? But they just sort of forgot to put on that rider that said the courts can have nothing to do with this, and they have the right to do that under Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, to limit appellate jurisdiction of our courts. And they refused or forgot, or say what you will, just within the last week, two more courts have struck down the federal partial birth abortion bill. They knew that was going to happen. But, you see, it's all play-acting. They have to give the people out here the idea that the Republicans are pro-life and the Democrats are pro-choice. And, of course, it's all perception. It's like rhetoric over reality. It's reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. And that, of course, is one of the greatest illusions of all time, is the Republicans are pro-life and the Democrats are pro-death. Many of the leaders of the Republican Party are pro-death. They just don't want the public to know because they want their votes. Have you had that feeling, Brent?
I have to give credit to President Bush in that he's appointed some judges that will ultimately lead to major victories. The problem with the Roe versus Wade, now, I'm not a lawyer. People say it's bad law. I don't know whether the Roe versus Wade decision is bad law. I know for sure it's terrible medical science. It said that an induced abortion was safer for the mother than a term delivery, which was absurd back in 1973, and the evidence since then has just made it overwhelmingly absurd. Back in 73, it was known that a full-term birth offered breast cancer protection for the woman. But sadly, Sam Wade, the attorney who was against Roe, didn't present the evidence showing that induced abortion was unhealthy for the woman. But anyway, the evidence is now being presented, like it was presented in the New Hampshire parental notification case. For instance, the Eagle Forum brief did a very good presentation of the 2003 Rooney Calhoun report about the prematurity risk. It also covered the cancer risk and also the all-cause mortality risk during the first year after induced abortion. So the judges have just been presented with some of this new evidence, and in future cases they'll be seeing it again. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming.
And I really think that what we have to do, of course, know ourselves, be able to articulate this, and know where we can get the information. When we get back, I'm going to have Brett tell you where to get his information, and of course he relies upon the scientific studies which are there, and of course having been a doctor, having studied at least the issue of the effect of the relationship between partial birth abortion and breast carcinoma, there is no question at all that it's a direct relationship, and the more first term or second term abortions you had, the greater your risk of breast carcinoma. They know that, they just didn't want the young girls to know, because of course they wanted to kill the babies. And when you understand that, if you believe there are really too many children in the world, too many people, then you can understand why they're doing what they're doing. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess is Brent Rooney. So, Brent, do you think that the information is getting out? Because certainly we do programs like this, and we reach, I like to think, a growing audience, but we need to at least reach hundreds of millions of people. Are you getting an opportunity to get on lots of radio programs to get the information out?
A little bit.
Well, what we need is, of course, you get on a lot more programs. What sort of response do you get when you get onto the programs? Or is it only the people who really are sort of pro-life who will put you on the programs?
Well, that's definitely been the case so far. But, of course, the prematurity risk is somewhat new to people, and perhaps the audience doesn't know what to think about it.
Well, I think that we have to look at the studies, and certainly these studies are just overwhelming volume of evidence that there's a very definite relationship between not only breast carcinoma and suicide rates, but of course premature birth, and then don't many of the girls actually have difficulty getting pregnant after they've had a induced abortion?
Exactly. Infection is a grave risk of induced abortion. That increases the risk of ectopic pregnancy, which means a pregnancy that doesn't even reach the womb. Also increases the risk of infertility. It increases the risk of substance abuse. And it's terrible medicine. It's all risks, and I don't see any benefits.
Well, of course, to the pregnant girl who's frightened, she thinks she's getting rid of a problem, and if she doesn't understand, she may be creating more problems. Why she's going to go ahead and have the abortion, when you begin telling her what this may do for the rest of her life, you could certainly make her change her mind, or many of them would change their mind. And, of course, once they had seen the ultrasound, a picture of the child within them, and realizing this is not a blob. I mean, it is a living human being. And if not aborted, it will live 67 years. It'll probably be born, and who knows what that child might accomplish.
Well, some women think that, let's say they get pregnant at age 20, they think that they'll be able to get pregnant in the future and have a baby anytime they want it. But this, their first pregnancy could be their last pregnancy. They could be infertile. They could have a side effect of a hysterectomy where their womb is removed and they'll never have a baby. So if they think that they can just have babies at will, that is not guaranteed. If you have that first baby, say at 20 or 22, 24, you've decreased your risk of breast cancer, you've decreased your risk of ovarian cancer, you're going to be a happier individual on average, you're going to be less likely to commit suicide. Basically, the benefits are just heavily weighted in your favor, and the downside of having an induced abortion is heavily weighted against you. It's basically, abortion is a bad deal. It is a poor choice. It is a dumb choice. It is what I call quackery. Quackery is a quacker is one who pretends a skill or knowledge which he or she does not possess.
Well, I'll never forget, of course, when I went through my medical training, all the emphasis was on preserving life. In fact, if somebody wanted to do a hysterectomy, they always had to get a consultant from somebody else, you know, from another doctor to certify that there was no chance that person was pregnant. You couldn't, you had to get a pregnancy test. Somebody else had to examine the woman because there was a fear that they were going to do a hysterectomy and destroy a life. Or, you know, if they wanted to do to clean out the uterus, to do a DNC, and we'll be back here in just a minute and we'll discuss that. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and if you have a question for Brent Rooney about this issue of abortion, its relationship to all the various complications of abortion, why, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I was just talking about when I was practicing medicine. I graduated from medical school 53 years ago and began practicing medicine. Went into private practice here in Santa Cruz, where I live today, in 1960. And in those days, if somebody wanted to do a DNC, a dilatation and curettage of a woman that's scraping out the uterus, you'd do that if it had a miscarriage to stop the bleeding and make sure there weren't any products of conception there that might act as a focus for infection. Before you could do that, you had to have another doctor certify that this was, you were not doing an abortion. Abortion was something that was really anathema to any ethical doctor. The idea of medicine was that you were there to save human lives and preserve human life at all costs, not to destroy human life. And then, starting in the late 1960s, a massive propaganda campaign began, and it said, well, you know, certainly we ought to be concerned about human life, but in the case of rape or incest, why, a woman should have a right to have an abortion. Wouldn't that be logical? I mean, who's in favor of rape or incest? And of course, what they did is they framed the debate in the wrong issues. It's sort of like, what should we do in Iraq? Should we stay there and have chaos? Should we pull out and have chaos? Which of the two do you want? Well, it's the same thing with abortion. I mean, who's in favor of rape and abortion? So, rape and incest. So certainly we ought to have at least the right to abortion for rape or incest, or to preserve a mother's life. If the mother's going to die, she'd have a right to abort that child. I mean, after all, she might have 10 children, and if she dies, who's going to raise her children? Isn't abortion justified under those circumstances? And then, of course, it went from there to for a mother's health, you know. Certainly, if this is going to be affect a mother's health, a woman's health, certainly we have the right to abort. Well, of course, once they brought into health, that could be mental health. That could be anything where she says, I'm going to be nervous, I want to get rid of this child. And that phrase, you know, to protect a mother's health or a woman's health, is really a catchphrase for abortion on demand upon request. So you've seen this evolution, and now doctors, of course, accept the destruction of human life in the womb and of course at the end of life, and there's increasingly a move towards euthanasia, and the whole moral fabric of our society, but even more so, the moral fabric of medicine has been eroded. Brett, are you old enough to remember where it was before Roe versus Wade?
Yep. Let's go back to 1973.
Okay, let's go back to 1973. Go ahead.
I'm going to even go further back. I'm going to go back to 1956 in Hungary. There were two major events in Hungary in 1956. It was the failed revolution against the USSR occupiers. And also, 56 was the year that Hungary legalized induced abortion. However, in December of 1973, the same year as Roe versus Wade was decided in the United States, the Hungarian government announced in their Hungarian news publication, a government-sponsored publication, that the epidemic of premature and handicapped babies was due to induced abortion, and they were going to have to put on severe restrictions starting in the following month, January of 1974. So here, in 1973, the same year as Roe versus Wade, the Hungarian government recognized that induced abortion was a disaster as far as birth defects for babies. And this was actually publicized in 1975 by Dr. Leslie Iffy, who was born and educated in Hungary. He wrote in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, telling the readers what had happened in Hungary in 1973. So he publicized this by a letter, but that just sort of died. So basically, Hungary was honest enough to admit that it was a disaster, and they put some restrictions. Now, it was a halfway measure, but it definitely reduced the abortion rate by about 40% within a year or two.
And I think it was so interesting that in Poland, where they had, of course, abortion on demand all during the communist years, the Iron Curtain came down, why the influence there and Catholic influence in Poland led to laws that outlawed abortion. And, oh, you heard the cries, all the women are going to die of induced abortion, they're going to get their abortions anyway, and of course, are they going to die because they can't get legal abortions? And it didn't happen. And they've had a marked increase in their birth rate, and the women are not dying because they're not having abortions. And it's so important that people understand that it is immoral to have an abortion. And there really are laws, and they're not laws that man made, they're laws that God made. And of course, the difficulty is that, you know, when women understand it's morally repugnant and wrong, and it's not only harmful to their health, but it's killing a human being. Women in Poland are having babies, and their population is beginning to increase. And in the other places throughout the world where they're restricting it, like Russia, they're losing a million people every year. A million people every year. More die than, of course, are born. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Brent Rooney, and we're simply talking about this subject of abortion. And of course, they said that in Russia today, there are a million more people in coffins every year than there are in the cradles. And as a result, they're losing a million people a year of the population of Russia. Because they'd done everything they could to destroy the desire of the people, to women, to have children. In fact, it was so interesting. Do you know Dr. John Wilkie Brent?
No, I don't.
Well, he leads the very pro-life group. It's a very staunchly Catholic group. He's a very, very wonderful individual. And Dr. Wilkie was over in Poland talking about pro-life issues, and he was actually asked by the head of the Greek Orthodox Church, or Russian Orthodox Church, in Russia, to come to Russia to talk to the priests there about the importance of pregnancy. Now, it just so happens that the head of the Russian Orthodox Church is a member of the KGB, and most of the Russian Orthodox priests are members of the KGB. They're all part of the Soviet secret police, and yet they were, of course, wanted to lecture these people so they could begin to lecture their population on the importance of having children, what was wrong with abortion, because Russia is dying. And, of course, the KGB, after Russia dies, I mean, you're part of the secret police and the country's dying, who's going to pay your salary? And so, actually, they paid Dr. Wilkie's way to the Soviet Union, or the old Soviet Union, to Russia, to actually talk to the members of the KGB within the clergy about the importance of human life and trying to preserve it. So it seems like we've got a world gone mad, doesn't it? Here in America, why we promote abortion, and in Russia, they're doing everything that can to try to preserve human life.
Well, maybe you can connect me with Dr. Wilkie. For instance, as you know, the abortion rate went down by 97% in Poland between 1989 and 1993. And the prematurity rate dropped by an amazing 41% between 1995 and 1997. So it seems logical to me that the birth defect rate, specifically the cerebral palsy rate, has probably gone down in Poland. So I would love to get statistics from Poland on what their cerebral palsy rate trend has been over the last 10 to 12 years. That to me, the prematurity rate is a very strong indicator that things are going better. Maternal mortality rate in Poland has dropped by 50%. Their maternal mortality rate is much lower in Poland right now than it is in the United States. But I would love to get statistics on birth defects.
Hold that thought right there, Brent.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Brent Rooney, and our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the question is, do people out there really care about human life? Because we have been systematically killing 1.5 million children a year. Now, the figure has dropped in recent years. The figure that Brent uses is 1.3 million children are aborted every year. I've seen more recently a figure of 1.1, whether it's 1.1 or 1.3. Anyway, it's down from where it was. And I really think this is a direct result of abstinence education and the work that people like Brent do, of trying to make young women, girls, understand that when they take the life within them, they may be ultimately destroying their own life in the years that lie ahead. Brent, would you like to get your website, your information out so people can get in touch with you? And if you're out there in the listening audience, remember our number here, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. How can people get in touch with you and get information on what you're talking about, Brent?
Just send an email to stopcancer@yahoo.com.
stopcancer@yahoo.com, okay.
I'm sending out every month I'm sending out something called WALS, Win Abortion Liability Lawsuits, and basically it's advice on how lawyers can better have the higher odds of winning an abortion lawsuit.
And, of course, you're talking about the relationship between breast carcinoma and first trimester or second trimester abortion. And there is a definite a causal relationship there. And since we can't get organized medicine to do anything, since we can't get the government to do anything, and even when we have Republicans in key positions in government, why, of course, abortion on demand is still the law of the land. Maybe we're going to have to do something to the lawyers. And so basically there have been, I know there was a case over in Australia here a few years ago where a woman won a lawsuit of that sort, wasn't there?
Well, actually, Dr. Alan Kay delivered Christy Bruce in 1989, and Christy Bruce had cerebral palsy. Now, Christy Bruce sued Dr. Kay, claiming that he was medically negligent in her care. But Dr. Kay pointed out to the judge Michael Grove, that the mother, Sharon Chevelle, had previous induced abortions, and it had undoubtedly caused damage to the uterus, having a perforation. And Judge Michael Grove agreed, and he cleared Alan Kay. So in this case, abortion was used as a defense. So it can actually be used as a defense in also the United States as a defense, but also you can have women claim or children claim that the birth defects were due to their mother's previous induced abortions. So it's used as a defense when some doctor is falsely accused of causing the birth defect, where it's really due to previous induced abortions. Or the plaintiff can realize, hey, maybe my birth defect wasn't caused by the obstetrician, it was due to these previous abortions that I had, and through the abortion doctors.
But I wonder how the mother must feel when she has a child with cerebral palsy, And, of course, the child was born prematurely because of her decision to have destroyed another one of her children or several of her previous children. So think of the guilt she must feel. And I'm sure that many of the women who actually have had abortions do have a tremendous sense of guilt, don't they?
Well, these are basically young women, so they're being misled by the doctors. They're being misled by their family. They're being misled by the government. So, yes, some of the guilt may be deserved, but a lot of the guilt is by the older generation who should know better.
But of course, a lot of it is by our educational system that is not telling our children the truth in school. And then, of course, a lot of times the father of the child wants the girl to get an abortion so he won't have to pay for that child, the rearing, and be paying the rest of his life. Because if he is a sire to a child, legally, he is responsible for it. So it is to his benefit to talk the poor girl into having an abortion.
Well, let me suggest the following, which I'll try and pursue this year, which will be a letter to the Surgeon General of the United States saying, there's very strong evidence in the 1980s, 1990s, that a second trimester induced abortion increases the risk of incompetent cervix, which means an increased risk of premature birth. And we want the Surgeon General to tell us, are you aware of any new evidence since the year 2000 that this is no longer the case? Anyway, the evidence, so basically the burden of proof would be on him to find new evidence that the second trimester abortion is no longer a risk factor.
Yes, but has the Surgeon General ever, in recent years, come out strongly against, abortion, the first trimester abortion, second trimester abortion, or even a partial birth abortion, which is a horrendous procedure? And of course, the fact that the Republicans, I should say, would pass a partial birth abortion bill and send to the president without a provision on there the courts could not intervene. They knew very well the courts were going to intervene, and it was all showbiz. And that's what he went so unconscionable, and I think would think that the president would have refused to have signed it, saying, set it back and put a provision on there that courts can't intervene. And now everybody wrings their hands and says, oh, shucks, well, it's those nasty judges who are at fault. No, you'd expect the judges to do that because of the decisions of the Supreme Court in the past. They're simply upholding what is said to be the law of the land, which is not. It's the law of people who hate human life. But the fact that the Senate and the Congress could have prevented that, and all they had to do was simply put a rider under the bill saying the courts cannot intervene, and they refused to do it. They knew exactly what was going to happen. This way, they can continue to kill the children, and they get all the credit for being pro-life from the average individual. It's going to be very interesting to see how Judge Alioto and Judge Roberts Reel vote, but, of course, they are still only 4-5. And I often have a feeling when I see these decisions come down by the Supreme Court that somebody sits down and says, well, let's give them a 4-5 decision. Let's make them think that we're almost going to get it. Maybe if we just get one more judge on the Supreme Court. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, 7 of the Supreme Court justices of the United States Supreme Court were appointed by Republican presidents. And many of the Republican appointees to the United States Supreme Court have consistently upheld Roe v. Wade. So don't get your hopes up. Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Well, I guess this evening is Brent Rooney. If you'd like to get hold of him, his email is stopcancer@yahoo.com. That's stopcancer@yahoo.com. And our telephone number here, if you have a question or a comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Maybe you think that a woman should have a right to have an abortion in a free society. We'd like your opinion if you would like to talk to Brent. But I will tell you that I believe that God disapproves of what's going on. I think God has a plan for each and every one of us. And when we violate his laws in the name of convenience, of course, I believe there are going to be terrible consequences, not only on those individuals, but eventually on a society that's turned its back on God and God's plan for human life. What are your thoughts on that, Brent?
Well, let me put it this way. Imagine that a child, sues an abortion doctor for her cerebral palsy, and the court agrees with her. And there's a private settlement that runs into the millions of dollars. What's going to happen to the medical malpractice insurance rates for the abortion doctors? They're going to skyrocket, absolutely skyrocket. So although the abortion rate keeps going down slowly, people think, well, it's going down slowly, so it could be 30 to 50 years before this procedure is very rare. I personally think there's going to be a Berlin Wall effect. All of a sudden, the Berlin Wall is going to come down. You're going to have hundreds of abortion clinics going bankrupt within 1 to 3 years when this starts to happen.
I think what's even more interesting is that most young doctors are not going into the abortion business. They're not going into the business of killing innocent children. And I think that the average age of an abortion doctor is something around 59. They're mostly older doctors who are having difficulty making it in life, and they're simply doing it for the money. Not because, of course, any idealism on their part. But what's really so interesting is there has been a dramatic decrease in the number of these abortion clinics, these places where the unborn children are killed all across America. Certainly that is true, isn't it, Brett?
Well, I hadn't heard that statistic. That's encouraging. Let me give you a specific detail in what I'm proposing for this future, what I call an ABD lawsuit, abortion birth defect lawsuit. Now, a lawyer will tell you, well, that's going to be very hard to win because the burden of proof is on the plaintiff to prove that the doctor caused the premature birth and the birth defect. Now, here's how ABC, abortion breast cancer, and the ABD, abortion birth defect, are linked. If you can show in a court of law that the procedure should not have been performed, in other words, it was very contraindicated, then you lower the hurdle to proving causation. So if the court accepts that the breast cancer risk made the procedure contraindicated, in other words, shouldn't have been done, that lowers the hurdle to proving causation for the birth defect risk. So abortion breast cancer and abortion birth defects are legally linked.
And, Chris, one of the other important things is the informed consent laws. Did the doctor inform the girl that there was an increased chance of her not being able to get pregnant? If she did get pregnant, the child being born prematurely with permanent brain damage and cerebral palsy. Did the doctor explain that to her? Well, if he didn't explain that to her or tell her that, and of course what they use is they put in the term, well, you know, there's a danger of incompetent cervix. The average girl, 16 or 17 or 18-year-old girl, doesn't understand the implications of that. That is not an informed consent. That's a cop-out. I would think you have an excellent opportunity for a very effective lawsuit with something like that, wouldn't you?
Exactly, and incompetent cervix is a known risk factor for cerebral palsy. Incompetent cervix is a known risk factor for cerebral palsy because the incompetent cervix means that more pathogenic germs get into the womb. So right there on the consent form, if the consent form said incompetent cervix, but it didn't say cerebral palsy, that is medical negligence right there on the consent form. And whether it mentioned the cerebral palsy or not, obviously incompetent cervix means that the patient has been put at increased risk of a future premature baby with cerebral palsy.
And I will tell you, you know, one thing, Brent, having been in the medical profession for many years, when a child comes into a courtroom and that child is seriously injured, whether they have some sort of a destroyed joint or certainly the specter of a child coming in with cerebral palsy and barely being able to walk or having to wear the braces or not being able to talk or use its arms or having this a sort of automatic writhing type movement as you see with athetosis, the sympathy of the jury goes out to that child. It's just a natural thing. And I hate to use something like that to have to try to stop this barbarity that is taking place in America today. But if you have to use the legal profession to do it, if the medical doctors won't do it, and if the religious leaders of this country are just too busy growing their churches to be involved in these issues, why, of course, maybe we're going to have to go to the lawyers. But if they will do it, as they've done with tobacco, wasn't idealism at all. It was a big paycheck at the end of the case. then let's give the lawyers all the help we can to bring the lawsuit against these unscrupulous doctors who are killing our future generation of our children. And I have no sympathy at all for them.
Let me just sort of do a sideway. If you have a child with cerebral palsy, start doing some research in something called hyperbaric oxygen treatment. I'm no great expert in this particular field, but I've heard some good reports, and it appears to be relatively safe. So if your child has cerebral palsy or your relative has cerebral palsy, do some checking and double-checking and look into hyperbaric oxygen treatment.
Well, of course, I've heard that recommended for people who've had brain injuries. It was suggested for Terry Schiavo that perhaps if she'd had hyperbaric oxygen treatment, she might have had some improvement, because certainly the brain, the human body, has tremendous capacity for improvement. But, of course, Mr. Schiavo had no intention of doing anything that would help Terry. He wanted her killed, and of course so did the courts, and of course the ultimate in hypocrisy was all the politicians posturing, whether it be Jeb Bush or members of Congress, saying, oh my goodness, but we are a nation of law, and one person said, we're going to kill her, and that was it. And of course, I never forget, as we were approaching the time when Terry was dying, and of course if the people were there seeing her, her face was sallow, her cheeks were swollen, her tongue was dry, you know, this look of helplessness on her face. And on television, over and over again, they'd show the pictures of Terry Schiavo taken many months before, looking so healthy, looking so robust, her cheeks full, you know, and her eyes wandering around. And what they did is they used television to put the impression in her mind that, you know, she was well hydrated. She was just waiting to die. And, of course, what she was really being done was starved to death. If you did that to an animal, they would put you in prison. But it's all right to do it to a human being in the United States today, with the full support of the governor of the state of Florida and the members of Congress here, who could have stopped it at any time. And people in the executive branch of government, they postured, they pretended they were really concerned, but it was all showbiz, the ultimate in showbiz. And then, of course, they would have this lawyer for Mr. Schiavo, and he would come on and say, oh, she's so comfortable now. I mean, she is just so comfortable. She's dark. This is man is actively involved. The lawyer for Terry Schiavo's husband was actively involved in the euthanasia movement. And this was simply one of the opening salvos in this idea that there's certain lives that are not worth living, and they should be eliminated. They're useless eaters. There really are people who want to kill human beings in this country, and they work within the euthanasia movement. They're not concerned about human suffering. They hate humanity. And talk about what you will. And they talk about the doctor back in Michigan, Kevorkian. Dr. Kevorkian was a disciple of Alice Bailey, our good friend Sidney Constance Cumby, who's a lawyer back there, was involved in some lawsuits with Kevorkian. And so one of her clients went through Kevorkian's garbage and found Kevorkian's copy of the writings of Alice Bailey, who was a Luciferian. And they were there in Kevorkian's handwriting, all the annotations. Now, you must understand, Luciferians hate humanity. They worship Lucifer, and that's where Kevorkian was coming from. But isn't it amazing? We would never hear that mentioned in the controlled media in America today. We'll be back here in just a moment with Brent Rooney, and we'll wrap up our program. If you have a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, our guest this evening has been Brent Rooney. One of the stories in the Bible that was always intrigued me was the story of the fall of Jericho. And you remember Joshua marched around the city, and then the walls came tumbling down, and God had given instruction to Joshua that they were to move into the city, and they were to kill every man, every woman, every child, every animal in the city, with the exception of Rahab and her family. And the reason that they were to kill them all, and you'll find this in the Psalms, is because they had sacrificed their children to Moloch. And you say, but the children, that wasn't fair. No, they were part of a totally corrupt society that was killing children, and that was unacceptable to God. And I would simply ask, how do you think God feels about America today? We've got Karen calling, and if you put Karen right on through, maybe we can get to her before we're out of the program. So, Karen, do you have a question for our guest? Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, do you have a question you'd like to ask?
No, I just want to make a comment.
All right.
When I was 25 years old, I had an abortion, and the doctor told me I needed to have it, and I was so confused at the time because I didn't know whether to have my baby or to have the abortion, and it was a long story, but afterwards I wasn't even going to tell my family, and I told them, and I ended up being in a mental institution. And they gave me all kinds of medication that made me sick. And I still take medication today. And what it really was boils down to I had a real stressful job that I got fired from at the same time.
Well, I know, Karen, I'm sure it's a tragic situation. I hope you have a personal
relationship. I couldn't forgive myself for the longest time.
I hope you have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, because only He can save you. Only He can forgive you. I can't forgive you. You can't forgive yourself, but our Lord can.
I've forgiven myself a long time ago now, but it took me a long time. It took about 15 years.
Well, I'm so glad, and, just pray for constantly forgiveness and maintain your good relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, because He can forgive our sins. We're all sinners saved by the grace of God.
Thank you
so much for calling, Karen, and God bless you. Bye bye. All right, Brent, do you have a parting thought for us?
Brent? Just keep up the fight. Tell women that having babies is a good thing, and that's the way to go. Go for the 40-week cure.
Good night. God bless. Bye bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our program this evening. I think that a lot of important things were brought out, especially Karen's call from Michigan. You see, it took a long time to forget this. It had a tremendous emotional impact on her, and it's still with her to this very day. What we do has consequences. None of us, of course, no man is an island. None of us can exist all alone. And when any person dies, why, it impacts on me. For I am one with humanity. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And, of course, that was John Dodd's... very, very famous quotation for that phrase, for whom the bell tolls. So... anyway, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, as we reach out across America to let people know we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. If you'd like to understand more on euthanasia, we have a 4-tape set on euthanasia. If you'd like to understand the spiritual battle that's going on today, why, our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. Now, you can pull many of these down off of our website. If you go to RadioLiberty.com and you have our permission to pull down our newsletters and to copy them and circulate them, and I believe it was our May and June newsletters of last year, the occult hierarchy. But, of course, our pamphlets, the occult hierarchy, part 1, part 2, part 3, cover our writings on the secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies out there. There really are people who worship Lucifer. There really are people who want to kill as many human beings as they can and promote wars and euthanasia and abortion and disease and to create new diseases and they support crime, and they send innocent people to prison and let the guilty go. Until you understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, you can't understand anything going on, or can you understand why we are moving towards a war with Iran and with Syria. You really need to get our material on the occult hierarchy, and you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter. And it goes into what's really going on over in Iraq and why the president is so intent upon bringing democracy to the world. And you see, it's part of a 3,000-year-old plan. Of course, the president, when he was speaking, I think it was the Naval Academy, talked about how for 2,500 years, men have been moving to bring about a world democracy. And it's almost a parody of what we write there, include the writings of Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist, who talked about for the fact that there has been a plan to bring about world democracy for 3,000 years, and there really are secret societies out there. And you'd be amazed at how many people working at the highest levels of our government have belonged to secret societies of one form or another. But they all have a common goal, a one-world government and a one-world religion. So pray for America, and pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty until we're together again. May the Lord be with you.